Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, national champions, and gunfight survivors help answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. And now, here is your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, photos, videos, other stuff, tales of our exploits, at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Coasting with me, Jack and Melody!
Yay!
Yippee!
She's not allowed to do yay.
No. Yippee is acceptable. Yay is my thing. Oh, okay. Don't bite my style.
I was planning that all day. I was scared.
I like how the show starts. I see Jack and Melody like look at each other and they're like, yeah, okay, are you ready? You're ready. And then were you videotaping that, I assume?
I was, absolutely. Oh, okay.
So I come in with the show's intro and Jack is sitting directly in my line of sight, mouthing the words that I'm saying while Melody videotapes it. So I'm sure that'll be online soon.
Absolutely.
Hey guys, guess what?
What's that, John?
This segment brought to you by Tactical Night Vision Company. The night is dark and full of terrors. Or at least, it used to be. But now we have the technology to fight the night. And TNVC is your one-stop shop for all your dark fighting needs. From the TNV PVS-14 Night Vision Goggle to the IR Patrol Thermal Monocular and everything in between, TNVC can outfit your defense against the dark arts. Doesn't matter if it's your lost keys, the enemy, and that little kid from down the street that likes to wander off. TNVC has what you need to find things in the dark. TNVC, now, with financing. Own or finance the night. Both of you. Melody's not allowed to come on the show anymore.
Yeah, that's way too distracting. I have someone to make fun with.
Anyway, so it is, once again, a Facebook user question episode. I know you guys are so excited, but this time it might actually be entertaining because we've got Melody here, someone who...
we have a knowledgeable person, to ask questions to.
You're supposed to set the bar really low.
Is no lower bar than we can set by our day-to-day activity.
Okay, fair enough.
Well, just as long as we don't ask her about rifle nomenclature, we'll be fine.
No, don't do that, please. I'm learning. I'm learning the whole long gun thing, so...
So anyway, Jack.
Well... In that case, we'll go ahead and start off with something that's not long gun related. Joseph Edward Timms asks, do you consider an AR pistol with a brace to be a useful self-defense tool, or is it a novelty?
I think it is useful, and I'll answer that. Do you want to take a shot at this one?
Absolutely not. Okay. Go.
Okay. I think it is useful inside of the context of what it's good for. And what I mean by that is... You know, in a perfect world, there would be no NFA, and we'd just be able to buy whatever we want.
Agreed.
That having been said, that's not the case. So for the instances where you need the abilities that a short-barreled rifle offers you as far as, like, compactness goes, but you can't deal with the wait time and the tax stamp and also the regulations for taking it across state lines, that's... where the AR pistol, in my mind, really does well. You know, do you lose some things? Yeah, not being able to shoulder it without, you know, breaking the law is kind of a problem. You know, but if you know how to run a single-point sling and you just stick it to full extension and get some tension, you can use whatever red dot optic. Is it an ideal thing? No. Is it useful? Yeah, inside of that particular window. Like, I'm getting ready to take a road trip, and I've not fully decided yet whether or not, you know, I'm going to have an AR pistol sitting next to me in the car. I probably will. You know, and it's something that's covered by my concealed carry permit in all the states that I'm going to go through. And it offers me a few more capabilities than just my handgun does, especially for longer shots. And that's something that seems to be, with everything going on in the world, a little bit more important than it used to be. So, yeah.
I mean, we both do a lot of traveling for a number of reasons. I will never travel again without an AR pistol.
Yeah.
It just, that's the world we live in, and you need to accept that, or you don't. Like, if it doesn't fit for you, it doesn't fit for you, but I know it fits for me.
Well, and the thing I will say about this is that, and because this is, you know, something that I think bears repeating from last week's show, the AR pistol is not something I go and retrieve. It's something that I have accessible to me where I'm at, and if I have time to deploy it and bring it to bear on whatever problem requires it, cool. If it doesn't, I'm not going back for stuff. I'm just going to have to handle it with what I've got.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, is that an AR pistol gets broken down and thrown in my backpack when I leave the car. I'm not leaving it stored in the car, period, because I don't want it getting stolen. And a lot of times, we need to be responsible with the decisions that we're making. And if we do something that is supposed to make us safer but ends up being negligent on our part, we might as well not have done that to begin with. So that's just my thoughts on that. Next question, Jack.
Jaycel Atkins asks, I'm attending ECQC February 2017. Any advice about getting ready 6 months out?
Melody, what'd I tell you when you asked me that?
You told me not to do anything. And actually, that was so probably the best advice that I got regarding ECQC, because it gives you a very honest evaluation of where your skills are overall right now. And I think that lesson is part of what you are going to ECQC for. So going with this idea that I'm going to prep and I'm going to do all this stuff is kind of doing ECQC a little bit of a disservice. I know people do take the lessons that they've learned from ECQC and go and work on those things and then go back and recheck themselves. But I think for that first class, go as you are.
Right.
And trust that he's going to take you through that, and he will.
Well, my other fear there is that if I prepare for a specific event that I know is, you know, upcoming, and I put all this work into it, and then I go and I do this thing, and it's like, okay, this is where I'm at. And then I don't have that specific event that I'm preparing for, and I slide on these things, you know, and I have suddenly set a benchmark for myself that is not a true benchmark, because I'm not continuing that work. And the other thing, too, is someone that had a terrible time at the ECQC that I went to, I mean, so much so that when you were talking about it with Craig, Craig was like, oh, yeah, John had a rough time. And I really did. It was physically very demanding because I was in the worst shape of my life, emotionally very demanding because, you know, the image that I had of myself was based off of a dude that didn't exist anymore, that was 10 years in the past. And it was just very, it wasn't great. But, you know, I learned from that, and I really feel like it helped me out on a lot of different levels. And I guess what I don't want people to do is, you know, not have that experience. I really want you to go where you're at today. And ideally, if I could figure out how to do it, I'd go once a year. You know, if I could make my schedule work and I could, you know, I could sell that as far as like something that I can afford to do with everything else that I've got going on, as far as like from a time, you know, pulling out from other commitments that I already have in the course of my job, I would absolutely do that. And if you're listening and, you know, are curious about how strongly I feel about ECQC, go once a year. I mean, because that really is like a generalized checkup of, well, here's where I was at in 2013, and here's where I'm at in 2014 and 15 and 16.
I'll go again. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I was messaging Craig just the other day, and I'm like, I really want to go to another ECQC. It's just, you know, finding the time. And that's one of the, We got about 20 seconds left, so I'll just keep talking, even though we've already answered this question.
I'll disagree with both of them. Drink a lot of protein and go work out like a bunch.
No. And I was saying this before the show that I'm going to send Jack to ECQC, and he's like, oh, cool, let me know when, because I'm going to get ready. I'm like, no, that's not how this is going to work. I'm going to tell you Thursday morning that you're leaving Thursday night to ECQC on Friday. So, but anyway,
have
hey,
fun,
we're,
Jack.
Yeah, we're doing our Facebook user question show right now. You're listening to Ballistic Radio! Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of air rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Sig Sauer, now with more options. We're not all the same, and our carry gun shouldn't have to be either. Sig Sauer gives you choices. With more models than the Bible's got Psalms, it's never been easier to find a Sig Sauer that fits your needs. From the extremely versatile Striker-fired P320 with modular grip frame, to the Legion Series P226 and the single-stack P225A1, or the entry-level SP2022. Sig Sauer makes a model that's right for you. Just don't ask for a Callahan full-bore auto-lock. They don't make that yet. Sig Sauer, when it counts! So we are doing our Facebook user question show, and I am wringing my hands as I read the ads, because that's what I do. Each and every time. I think it's the only way I can channel, like, the douche radio guy voice.
Do you realize how much the Sig ad rhymes? Like, I really want to drop a beat behind it one time.
Yeah, I realize. I wrote it.
No? Too much? Okay, moving on. From Martin Leo. Question for Melody, but John can chime in as well.
Well, thank you, Martin, for giving me permission to talk on my show!
On your own radio show.
It's all right.
What tips or techniques for having a conversation with children around 5 years old? Why mommy and daddy carry a gun? And how do you let them know that we don't just talk about mommy and daddy's gun to other people? Thanks.
I think having kids that age and starting out with, if it's something they see every day, it's not something they really ask about. It's like, why do we have a toaster? They don't really have that question. So not really making a big deal out of it is kind of a thing. But when my son has asked me that very same question, we talk about there are bad people in the world, and sometimes bad people want to hurt your mommy or your daddy, and mommy carries a gun so that I can stop that from happening. So I think that's a really good way to segue into that conversation. And as far as talking about that to other people, I've told my kids it's very much like talking about going to the bathroom. It's inappropriate to talk. It's not a bad thing. It's just something we don't talk about in public because that's a private thing. And that seems to resonate very well with little kids. I mean, there have been times when I've had my kids been like, Mommy, you know, in the bathroom, oh, there's your gun. It's sometimes inevitable, but they seem to understand things that happen in the bathroom are private, so guns are private. So if you make that correlation, it's worked for my family.
Well, and for me, you know, I have a 7-year-old and that I've had this conversation with for a while now. And the biggest hurdle was getting him to understand that, like, while there are actually bad guys. Like, he's all into bad guys and, like, Star Wars and Batman and whatever. And he's like, well, bad guys aren't real. I'm like, no, honey, they are. And this is something we need to not be worried about all the time, but it is something that can happen. And for me, the way I explained it was, I personally don't want anyone to know I have it because we don't always know who the bad guys are, and we don't want to let them, you know, a bad guy know if daddy's carrying a gun. We want that to be a surprise. I'm not commenting outside of anything other than my own personal experience. This is not a commentary on, you know, the merits of concealed versus open carry. This is just how I explained it to my 7-year-old. And that seemed to work pretty well for him. And it doesn't hurt either that he has zero interest in guns, which I'm fine with. I mean, that's, you know, he's his own person, whatever. But
that's a good distinction to make, though, because, like, my daughter's a little bit more interested in guns, and my youngest, who's just 2, he's extremely interested in guns. He wants to touch them all the time. He hasn't gotten to the point where he's asking a lot of questions, but if he continues down the road that he's already starting, I see that's going to be a far more conversation piece with us, and we're just going to be very honest with him about, you know, sometimes there are bad guys. Sometimes those bad guys, you know, the only way to get them to stop is to, you know, use force. And be very careful about the terminology, because remember, kids repeat what you say. So if you're saying things like use force instead of quote unquote shoot them, when they go repeat that to their friends in school, it doesn't sound as bad as mommy has a gun to shoot people. It's mommy has a gun to use force.
Right.
You guys have had better luck keeping your kids from talking about your guns than I have from keeping my friends who are in their 20s and 30s from bringing it up. Like,
well, you need to understand, like, it, as a parent, and it's as someone that likes to really think about things as they're happening, you know, the fact that I am shaping this human being's view of the world actively on a day-to-day basis is like kind of weird. But I mean, it's a little different when I remember once when he was littler, he actually like reached up and like grabbed my shirt or something, and I slapped his hand, you know, when he was, I want to say like 4 or something like that. We were out in public, and he doesn't even walk on my right side anymore. And he doesn't know why he doesn't do it. He just doesn't, because of that one, you know, that one thing. So if you have the main thing that you need to do is talk to your kids about firearm safety and what to do in public and, you know, what to do in private, because, you know, they're not just automatons that are going to make good decisions. They're going to do what you tell them to do for the most part, except when it's really terrible for them to not listen to you, and they seem to do that also. But anyway, next question.
Coming from, sorry, Andrew Keith, I lost it there for a second. How useful is a sub-second draw to fire time? Is the hours of training worth it?
Let's break that into two parts, and then I'm curious to hear Melody's opinion as well. Is a sub-second draw useful? Yes. Yes, it is. As someone that has on occasion been able to do that, it can very much change the dynamics of a situation. You know, I have accessed firearms quickly before in for reals, and it has made things turn out a lot better, you know, to the point where I didn't have to shoot anybody, which is a good thing. I strongly believe that a fast, safe draw is a very important skill to develop. That having been said, the amount of effort it takes for me to consistently be able to draw, like consistently be able to draw from concealment under 1 second, personally, I can dedicate some effort to things that I feel are a little bit more important, and I lose a little bit of that skill, and I'm like right around 1.15 or 1.2, and I'm working these other things a lot more. So it does take a lot of dedicated effort to that one thing. And I don't know if that's worth it for most people. So it's, if you could do it without diverting attention and resources from other things, sure. But to the detriment of long range accuracy or, precision in general or other skills that are important, no. But what do you think, Melody?
I think what's more important than necessarily the sub-second, because I have never gotten a sub-second from concealment without a gun start, you know, hand starting on the gun.
And you've seen me do it, because we were doing it out in,
Kansas. Yeah. We did it. And, yeah. And I've gotten very, very close, but yeah. Doing that front, like hands at a low ready to conceal, I haven't done it sub-second yet. I've done it very close. But anyways, what I think is more important than that is being it, particularly for women who have different styles shirts, being able to clear your cover garment clean and draw clean with every single outfit that you own.
Right.
Because that way, even if it's a 1.1 or a 1.2, you're still getting it out clean. I have been to meetings where I wore a different shirt than I normally do and went to draw just practicing, you know, because when I put on a different shirt, different outfit, I do at least 5 to 10 draws from that outfit to make sure, dry, so that I can get just the repetitions down. And I realized I can't draw with this shirt without it. It was just too much fabric getting in the way. So I would say that is more important than the time that you can do it under one outfit or one, you know, certain set of circumstances.
Well, and tangentially to that, I'd say that if I had to pick with what skills we should be developing, really being able to read a situation and understanding the legalities involved to where you can pre-access the firearm once it gets to the point where it's legally justified to do so and it might head off future violence is a much more important skill to develop. You know,
well, I was actually going to draw a parallel to this where I kind of agree with her. Before I was a shooter, I did a lot of martial arts, and some of them were sword-based. And in kendo...
Nerd.
In kendo, you know, going for that very fast, smooth draw was important. But yeah. When I moved to other styles, it was, no, what you're doing with the sword matters more.
Well, and I think the other thing, too, is that too often we try and, like, come up with this... You know, one size fits all answer where it's a black and white yes or no. So at the end of the day, being able to access a firearm quickly, yes, incredibly important. Is there a part-time in particular that will be the difference between killed on the streets or not killed on the streets? No, I don't know. I don't think there is. I think that really what we should be doing is striving to be the absolute best that we can be given our resources and things that we're allowed to dedicate to it. Just based on our own life. But anyway, we got to go to break. We're doing answering your questions. Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to The Danger Zone. Ballistic Radio brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of air rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scatterguns since 1977. Legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories at www.wilsoncombat.com. Ah, it is the Facebook user question episode, and we have a special guest in the studio, Melody Lauer. So our answers are much classier and better thought out than they usually are.
And we're wearing pants for a change.
Ah.
Oh, I don't want to hear about that.
No.
Well, we were inverted.
No. Oh. God.
Nice, Jack.
Thank you.
So many jokes that I just censored because, yeah, anyway. Please keep going. Not with the jokes. With
all
the
right,
questions.
I'm going in for guns here. Brian Huffer. there, I said it.
Brian,
please tell us how to say your last name. You ask a lot of really good questions. What is the most common misconception people have about defending themselves or their kids when their kids are present?
Melody, you want to go first? You want me to go first? I'll go first. Okay, here. Yeah. Who talks first? Do you talk first? Do I talk first?
Do we do rock, paper, scissors?
Oh, you totally missed a reference.
Wow. Get out of the studio.
Oh, shocker. I missed a pop culture reference.
Yeah. Jack was like, she's about to curse. Here it is. Oh, that's not the word.
No.
Don't give me those looks. You frightened me.
Anyway, jeez. So the thing that I found, I guess it really, when Melody and I started talking about like the Iron Parent thing, that really started developing the curriculum. One of the things that I was bothered by was, and I didn't have a name for it. This was Melody is who, you know, came up with the nomenclature here. But as far as like the number of parents or people in general that were shielding people from bullets. And I'm a ballistics nerd, and that's something that I do quite a bit, you know, either professionally or not. And one of the things that I have seen a lot of is shoot-throughs, especially with bad guys shooting at people because they'll use whatever bullets they can find. And generally, the bullets they can find are full metal jacket, and those tend to zip right through people. So we've got a lot of techniques and tactics that are based upon, like, getting people behind us or whatever. And there's reasons to do that, but those reasons aren't to, you know, shield people from bullets, at least in my opinion. You know, moving something I care about to what has just become the backstop. You know, because I'd like to think that if I present a firearm to deal with a deadly threat, that I probably have that threat's attention at this point. You know, maybe I don't want my loved ones in my general vicinity. What about you, Melody? When we started doing this, what was the biggest thing you saw?
Well, this is kind of a two-part question. He talks about basically defending yourself and then defending your loved one. I think something for defending yourself is having a true understanding of when you can actually legally pull a gun.
Yep.
And this goes for yourself and for your loved one. A lot of people do not pull a gun soon enough. And that is a problem for them because they don't understand that they can pull a gun that fast. And then that goes into the second part, which defending your kids. They don't get aggressive enough and take the fight to the bad guy aggressively enough. Well, those would be the two things I would say.
And to be clear, too, and this is...
When it's legal and when it's, you know...
Well, and the other thing, too, is that, and I hate to turn this into like a bit of self-promotion, but... you know, one of the other things that we have to be really careful about is not allowing our emotions to take control and over respond because our children are involved. So there's a lot of different things at play here, but it's a nuanced question and we don't really have enough time to get into it on a, you know,
that's why you should come to our class.
Well, I mean, I was just going to heavily imply that. I wasn't going to come out and say it because
I'll say it for you, John.
Thank you. I personally don't like to come across as a used car salesman, but thank you. So, anyway, next question.
From Kyle Goley, and I actually really like this one because I'm a bit of a history nerd. If today was like the Wild West and everyone carried a gun openly, what would you carry? And Kyle, you're wrong about that. Some of the best gunfighters in the Old West carried concealed. Doc Holliday was one of them.
Yep. So what a lot of people don't realize is there's this, you know, romantic vision of the Wild West as far as, you know, what it looked like and what it didn't look like. And we've gotten that off of Hollywood. But let's say that I knew for a fact everybody was carrying a gun these days. Like it was presumed that more people were armed than not. I wouldn't change anything. You know, I am personally carrying what I feel to be, you know, for me personally. So right now I'm carrying and yes, I'm biased or a sponsor, but really like this gun. I'm carrying a full-size SIG P320 slide on a compact frame. You know, I made a first-round 115-yard A-zone hit when we were out in West Virginia at the end of day one. It conceals well. I can shoot it fast. I can shoot it far. I can shoot it up. Whatever. I wouldn't change anything. So,
if you actually look, and he also asks, is anything changed day to day from those days to here as far as pistol work went? They haven't.
Well, they have, though. And let me talk about that for a second. This is where when we start looking at like things that happened in the past, we need to understand what equipment they were dealing with. And that's why when a lot of people start bringing up like the works that Fairbairn and Sykes did, like Shoot to Live and stuff like that, you need to understand that the sights that people had available to them on guns back then were rudimentary at best. And that's one of the things that has changed quite a bit is the advent of high visibility sights and things like that.
I agree with you, but I'm going to tell you you're wrong, because if you look at Wyatt Earp's pistols, you look at Doc Holliday's pistols, they actually went with longer barrels and taller sights.
Well, yes, but what they were trying to do was do what we've done now, is get a higher visibility sight that they could see.
So you're saying that gunfighters have realized seeing your sight is really important the whole time?
Well, so here's... Outside of a few historical, you know, examples of people that were genetically gifted in a way that 99.9... You know, Jelly Bryce, he could do things that no one else could do. And he based his TTPs off of that. For the most part, though, the people that shoot other people for a living like to see the bumpy things on top of their gun. And for the last 150 years... This is why we're at where we're at today, is because generally that's a good thing. So, you know, and I'm sure I'm going to get a bunch of people, oh, blah, 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 and it's like, well, whatever. So,
well, I mean, and I think there's also the romanticized view that the Wild West, there were a ton of shootings. There are more shootings in any metropolitan today than there ever was in Tombstone.
Well, the other thing that you, and we're spending too much time on this particular question, but you also need to look at population densities and per capita stuff and whatever. But anyway, yes, it wasn't like the movies. Would I change anything? No. Sights are good. And most of the people that say they're point shooting aren't. Ooh.
Shots fired and unaimed.
Well, no. See, that's the...
No. Just drop it.
Just let me say this real quick. If you can see the gun in your field of view, you are aiming the gun with your eyes. You're not pointing the gun. Jim Cirillo called it a silhouette sight picture. Other people have called it other things. Blah, 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 blah. Anyway.
Glenn Doss asks, Melody, give us a rundown of your EDC.
Oh, my. Usually it's a Glock 19. A reload, if I can handle it. A clinch pick, Nightmare. And then let's...
What kind of Glock 19, Melody?
I'm sorry. A bore sight modified Glock 19. Okay. That's apparently very important. Then I usually always have pepper spray and flashlight.
Medical stuff?
I do have medical stuff, usually in a bag, because I can't always fit it on my person because I'm small. So that always is a tourniquet, probably some sort of a pressure bandage, and depending on the size of my bag, more stuff or less stuff.
Right.
From Klein Hunt, what is the best zero setup for a red dot for home defense?
So there are two popular ones right now, and either one of them is the correct answer. I will say what I personally prefer is 100-yard zero or 100-meter zero, because at no point in time is the bullet above your eye. There's no hold-unders. I have, and when we took TAC rifle out in West Virginia with Pat Goodall at PFT, I had tried a 5200 zero because Steve Fisher told me I should really try it. And the number of times that I sent bullets over the target was frustrating. And then it occurred to me about at the end of day one, the reason why I was doing that was I wasn't using the zero that I had been using for the last
couple. Nice try, John. All those misses. I'm kidding.
When I started, I was shooting an AK, so 2500 was where I was at. Yeah. I've shot 5200. Pick one, go with it. Yeah. I don't think it's that big of a deal.
No, honestly, so whatever you do, do not do a 7-yard zero. I see people that do like these weird, goofy things. You need to learn mechanical offset. You need to learn it well. The way I have chosen to learn it well is by shooting really small things that are moving inside of 20 yards. Do people make fun of me for my proclivities as far as that goes? Yes, but...
When the Chipmunk War Crimes Tribunal begins, it's going to be a rough day for you.
There won't be any left to try me, so... No, they're digging up my retaining wall, dude. I'm not cool with it. Anyway, and I live in the middle of nowhere, so I can get away with some stuff that I probably... Anyway, So we got about 20 seconds left, and I'm just desperately trying to figure out what I can talk about in the next, space to fill the time before the break.
Well.
How was your coffee, Jack? Did you like your coffee?
It was a little flat.
Oh.
How can coffee be flat?
It just wasn't very tasty.
Okay.
I regretted it.
Oh. Well, at least you got some, because coffee's only for closers.
That's true.
Hey! You're listening to Ballistic Radio! Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Surefire. Know your target and what is beyond it. But how can you really know your target? By shining a really bright light at it. And that's where Surefire comes in. From the USB rechargeable 300 lumen sidekick, I've got one on my keychain right now, to the 500 lumen X300 Ultra or M600 Scout Light, Surefire can make sure you never have to yell, "Aziz Light!" ever again. Doesn't matter if you're shining a light at a potential threat or just helping your friends see through their eyelids. When you need all the lumens for longer, you need Surefire. And now, as a special offer to Ballistic Radio listeners, you can get 30% off all your orders at Surefire other than batteries and suppressors, using the discount code All the Lumens. That is ALLTHELUMENS. No space afterwards, because then it doesn't work. All the Lumens at Surefire.com. So, anyway, we are answering your questions tonight. And if you're like, how do I get a question on the show? Go to Facebook and like our Facebook page, because we have fun there. So, anyway.
From Nick Howie. Do you guys, Jack, Melody, and John, not the other three people doing the show, personally separate training magazines from your carry magazines?
Yes.
Absolutely. I drove 200 miles one time and then like stopped and realized I had 7 rounds of FMJ and a dummy round.
I paint them different colors.
Oh.
So my carry magazines have, I've spray painted the base pads, yeah, of my magazines different colors. It's a light gray instead of black so that I only have 2 of them. Everything else can be used for training. And then after I put so many rounds through these ones, that will be my new training color, will be the light gray, and then the black ones will be, so I'll just alternate. And it will take a while. I mean, this will be my carry magazine probably for years.
Well, let me answer this question in 2 parts. Should you separate your training mags from your carry mags? Yes. Yes, you should. Do I separate my training mags from my carry mags? Well, it depends.
When your storage method is the floor, I guess it makes it a little difficult.
Your organization skills do not support for that.
Oh, man.
Ambush. Yes. Straight ambush.
Yeah, but the number of times Melody has left a class with no training ammo or no ammo in a magazine versus the number of times I have done that.
In my defense, that was before I started doing this. Okay. So now I leave. So he is talking about there have been times where, like Jack said, you leave a class and you may find that you still have a training magazine that has partial FMJs in it. So now I have 2 carry mags that are painted a different color that never get unloaded unless I'm just shooting, you know, FMJs, or I'm sorry, hollow points through them to test them. But then they get loaded up. They get put in my range bag separate so that I can pull those out and then reload my gun. And I know it's loaded with what I need it to be loaded with.
Yeah. And, you know, for me, is I've always been, there's one time that I can remember that I've ever done that, like in the last 1,300 hours of training or whatever. Yeah, go ahead. That's one.
Coming from Eric Olson, question for the show, are you ever going to review the DD5? I'm a big Daniel Defense fan, already have a few, but I'm torn between the DD5 and the SCAR-17 for a 308.
Jack's got more time with the 308 than I do.
I think I've got more time on the SCAR than I do on the Daniel Defense, and I'll already tell you I like the Daniel Defense more. Prefacing with that I know that they're a sponsor, but to get the SCAR where you want it with like a longer rail and you change so much stuff on it,
it costs more money.
And the mags cost more money. I don't think it's as accurate, but I get to retain all of my stuff from a 5.56 gun works on my 308.
So I will take a completely unbiased look at the 308 versus the SCAR as I understand it currently. The SCAR and my supposition is that they're probably both about the same as far as accuracy goes. There might be a slight edge to the Daniel Defense. The Daniel Defense has a lot of positives going for it. It's already got the rail on it that I want. The mags are easier to find. They're cheaper. I like the safety on the SCAR a little bit better. The Daniel Defense ambi safety is a step in the right direction, but it's not exactly where I want it to be. Really, if I had to pick a negative to the Daniel Defense 308, is that it's a proprietary charging handle. And that's not to say it's a bad charging handle. I just don't want it to be proprietary. But otherwise, you know, the trigger's excellent.
Also comes with a Geissele out of the box.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know,
you don't need a special trigger. You don't need special internals. It's, you know,
yeah, like, it's already set up. I mean, it's already set up. You know, so between the two, I would rather have the Daniel Defense. You know, once again, though, and full disclosure, Daniel Defense sponsors the show. So, I mean, we try very hard not to be biased when we're giving reviews of things. You know, I think that I've done a pretty good job as far as being fair about the things that I like and don't like about the rifle without glossing over anything. But, you know, there might be some bias there. So just be aware that our opinions are, you know, that's in our background and that's where our opinion is coming from.
If I had to pick a negative, I wish we had an adjustable gas block on it.
And, you know, that's something else. We haven't run into any problems with it, but it would make me feel better.
I will say it's the most reliable 308 AR that I've ever shot. Like, mm-hmm. I shot that whole class. I never cleaned it. I actually never lubricated it.
Mm-hmm.
I just ran it, and I never had a problem out of it, which was shocking.
Yeah. And we're going to run it some more this week, and it's, you know, as we source more ammo for it, which has actually been the main reason we haven't done more with it lately, and someone in Cleveland now has a lot of nice 308 ammo out of Jack's truck.
Yeah, I got robbed.
Well, but anyway, hey, I think we got time for one more question, maybe. Maybe, possibly.
Oh, you killed me. I thought we were close.
Faster, Jack, like faster.
No, don't put pressure on him because...
Stephen Head, when being pulled over, was the best and most safe way to approach the situation of concealed carry with an officer?
If you don't need to inform, don't. I mean, so literally, if your state does not require you to inform an officer, don't say anything.
I second that, absolutely.
Yeah. Here's my things for traffic stops. I turn the car off. I put my hazards on. I roll all the windows down. Whether or not it's cold out, I turn the dome light on. I've got both hands out the window.
Yep.
I know some people say on the wheel. I like out the window, personally.
That way you can see it as he walks.
Well, and it makes it very clear what's going on. Ohio, I have to inform. I say, you know, afternoon, evening, whatever, officer, it's my duty to inform you that I have a concealed carry permit and I'm currently armed. Don't say gun. Do not use the word gun, period. There's a lot of law enforcement training and a lot of training various places that the threat command is gun.
Gun.
Which is something I disagree with anyway, but so just don't use the word gun.
If you have to inform, and after you inform, be quiet and listen to what he's about to say to you, because that's what's going to be really important. Don't try to anticipate. Let that guy control that situation.
Right.
And it'll work out better for you.
Yeah. So, I mean, in general, you know, just try and remain calm. Try and put yourself in the position of, you know, if I were walking up on a situation that I knew nothing about, how would I want people to act? And generally, you know, just relax and it'll be fine. So
from Ross Hicks, Melody, as an instructor, how do you balance instilling confidence in your student without giving them
Sorry, next time, Ross.
Ross, I'll make write a reply on the website for you. Sorry, bro.
Yeah, maybe we'll do a Facebook video, live video at some point in the next week or so while we're all gathered together. But anyway, hey, thanks for listening, everyone. Make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com. Like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. You get all sorts of things. We give stuff away. There's special offers, live videos, things like that. And hey, keep leaving those 5-star review on iTunes. We really appreciate it. That helps us out. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe. See you next week.